It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Well, all the rage these days seems to be panning the issues of the CEO of Astronomer, who is caught canoodling with his top HR executive at the Coldplay concert. And everybody, I'm sure, has seen the memes. What do you do when that happens and how do we deal with it? Well, on our show today, we have Chris Beard, who is a crisis communications expert. He's going to tell us what happens if your CEO gets caught cheating in the very most public way possible, or hopefully, you know, or another crisis, not hopefully, but like maybe a crisis that's a little more manageable than that. So welcome to Great Mondays Radio, Chris. When you first got wind of this, when you first saw this, I think it broke 2 or 3 weeks ago. What was your first reaction as like an expert? Were you immediately in the crisis, like the company mentality, or you were like in the head of the person getting caught or something else?
Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest, right? For the first 30 seconds, I was kind of going through that cringe where they're like, oh no, this isn't good. But then I quickly, my crisis communication brain switched on and I immediately started thinking like what could happen and thinking how quickly the company, their PR agency, et cetera, needed to respond to this issue and needed to get their story straight about what had actually happened.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of Schadenfreude. There's a little bit of, like you said, like, oh my God, like, yeah. Holy camoli, this is the most public thing possible. What are some, when in your experience, is this, where does this rate on the, like, I don't know, crisis-o-meter? I suppose every crisis feels like a 10, but like when this pops up, and we'll kind of expand this to more broad, you know, broad crisis strategies, but just want to kind of poke at this a little bit. How bad is this?
Yeah, it's a kind of dichotomy, right? Because in the large scale, like, it's not like people weren't injured, right? People were injured, but nobody was physically injured. People have been emotionally hurt by this situation, but nobody was physically injured. There wasn't a big explosion. It didn't involve a plane crash, things like that. So it didn't involve a product recall. There weren't millions of cans of X product being recalled. So in that sense, it wasn't that bad, but this involved the top of the house. This involved the head of HR and the CEO, and the issue, and just as much how it was handled, really led to a huge reputational crisis that I think Astronomer, the company, the organization, this is what they're going to be famous for the foreseeable future. So they need to put together a kind of strong reputation building program after this. Because again, this is what, as soon as you say Astronomer, people for the foreseeable future are going to go, oh, I remember that company. Yeah. That's where the CEO and HR lady were caught on camera having an affair.
Yeah, canoodling at Coldplay. So when you talk about a reputational, I don't know if it's like an offensive or reputational campaign. I mean, I almost feel like, of course you have to do it, but there's no way they're going to succeed in getting away from this almost ever, right?
Like, well, I think they could long-term, right? Now, again, I have to be full transparency. I wasn't super familiar with the company Astronomer beforehand.
I don't think anybody was, by the way.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. But that's the importance of having long-term reputational programs. I always refer to it as like putting deposits in the reputation account. Companies I've worked for, when I've worked for PR agencies, companies I've advised, it's important that companies are constantly putting deposits in the reputational account so that when something happens, the companies are given the organizations are given the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
That's a great way to put it. That they need to, they're now in the red. They need to to work to build themselves back up, right?
And they didn't have anything in the black necessarily to begin with.
No, they didn't have anything.
And again, when I think about how this issue is handled as well, I mean, I think the biggest issue is I always, you know, use the example, right? Aristotle said nature abhors a vacuum. And in my mind, society abhors a communication, an information vacuum. So when they didn't immediately start getting information out there about what the company stood for and how they wanted to distance themselves and started saying how this is inappropriate and the individuals weren't putting out statements, when they didn't get statements out there quickly enough, that information vacuum started being filled by others on social media, by false statements being put out there.
Yeah, it is.
And that's not unique to this situation as well.
The first thing that I heard as an interest, I would say, you know, a sort of like a distant but interested party was the announcement of his resignation, of the CEO's resignation. And that was a week. I think that took about a week to get out there. So if they did, do you know, I didn't look, do you know if they tried to put out any statements at all?
Yeah, they did, but there was a number of days in between. There was a number of days when sort of false statements were putting out until this gentleman put out a statement saying that he apologized to his family, his loved ones, etc., and apologized to the people in the company. I don't actually know. I haven't checked this morning if the company put out an official statement as well. I know the CEO or ex-CEO now at this point did, but and I think so, that was what was most important to this individual.
So what when a crisis occurs, what's the first thing that a company should do, an executive should do, or even a manager, I guess, maybe if it's a crisis within the organization, if it's not that public, I suppose. What do you advise your clients?
I mean, I think the first thing to do is understand the facts, because when you're developing a statement, or in actual fact, even right before you develop a statement, when I've consulted with companies before, for instance, faced a plant explosion. And the first thing you need to let your employees know is you need to let your employees know what's happened, who's been hurt, but how many people have been injured, etc. Because it's important to let your employees know this before you go public. Now, you may literally be putting out a communication to your employee and then putting out a communication publicly 5 minutes later, because again, we're working in very compressed timeframes in this situation. But I think in the midst of a crisis, culture, you know, comes to the forefront. How you handle a crisis, especially with your employees, says so much about your corporate culture. And again, I was listening to the pod from last week, right? And I think, you know, it's the same thing. You can't prevent all crises. You can't always prevent crises from happening, but you can control how you respond to them.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of a good rule for individuals. The rubric that I've learned. So there's a kind of a business leader that I listen to. His name's Scott Galloway. He's actually become fairly popular recently, but he said when he taught crisis management, he says that there's three rules. One, the top person takes responsibility. Two, they acknowledge the issue. They don't try to blame or deny. And then three, they overcorrect. Does that sound right to you? Would you do anything different or add or subtract?
Yeah, I think on the first point, the top person takes responsibility. It would kind of vary according to the crisis, right? If it was a big crisis, a true crisis, obviously you'd want the top person, the top of the house, speaking to this issue. If it's a smaller crisis, smaller issue, you don't necessarily want to elevate it to the top of the house and make it look like it's a bigger deal than it's possible. But again, I'm kind of nitpicking there.
Yeah.
Again, I always think as well, it's important that you're transparent. And again, there's a balance here, right? The lawyers in the room, when you're developing out what you're going to say, the lawyers in the room aren't pushing for transparency, because I get that, right? As a lawyer, every time you open your mouth, you're running the risk of saying something that could get you in trouble. So the lawyers don't particularly want this, but I think it's important that you're transparent and that you really take ownership of the issue as well. And taking ownership of the issue and taking ownership of the narrative is so important. Again, because if you don't take ownership of that narrative, somebody else is definitely going to jump in there and say what they think you've done. And on some cases, what they claim you've done without having the actual facts.
It strikes me as you're saying that, when you're thinking about the lawyers that are on your side, it is a competition of risks or perceived risks. And I think you're right. The attorneys and the lawyers are going to want to minimize, like, don't say anything. You're going to get sued. Well, in fact, that might be true. You are also, what they don't see is reputational harm, brand harm, and customer, you know, customer deception, right? Customer harm.
Yeah.
And I think as a leader, you have to see more than just the, I guess, immediate risk or the, you know, the risk of getting sued, right? The lawyers are like, don't say anything, don't say da, 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 plain. But
yeah, you can absolutely win in the courtroom, but not win in the court of public opinion, unless you come to that balance of working out what you want to say to protect your well-earned reputation and balancing that with what you want to say from a legal perspective. And I find with the majority of companies, it's not a battle per se, but there's two different perspectives, right? What you want to say from a communication standpoint, what you want to say from a legal standpoint, and you kind of end up somewhere in the middle and good compromises. But I have seen situations where companies, you know, again, they win in the courtroom. And when the court case is finally settled, chances are not too many people on social media or traditional media are going to be, and you know, if the story is reported, it's going to be like buried somewhere, you know, in a corner of a website saying X company won this lawsuit. And not many people are going to see that, but they're going to hear about the initial story. So again, it's that reputational versus legal risk is a real battle for people in the crisis communications industry. And I'm sure the lawyers would talk about the other side of it as well.
What is waiting too long? Like, what's the, or I guess maybe my, like, what's the ideal response time, right? You talk about, like, let's get it immediately. How do you, like, like, I can't even imagine it's like yesterday. You know what I mean? It's like, you're too late. Like, what, give me like actual time frames here. What are we talking about? Ideal and to too long? Where are we?
Yeah. And I mean, look, I've got some gray hair on my head, right? So that's changed a lot in the last 30 years. But I mean, you need to be putting out statements. In the last, you know, 30 years ago, it was, you know, you perhaps might need to respond the same afternoon or the same day or something. Nowadays, you need to respond. It can be within a matter of hours. But there are some, you know, that's why there's a balancing act. It really is an art. It's not like a science where I could tell organizations you must respond within an hour or you must respond within 30 minutes. You can see what happens when you don't respond quickly in this recent incident of the Coldplay concert. But also it's important that you're factual and accurate and that you understand immediately as a crisis communicator in these situations, yourself, HR, legal, other compliance needs to get in the room and work out what's been going on because you want to be factual and want to be accurate. And, you know, you don't want to be putting out another statement a day later saying, well, in actual fact, we didn't get that right. And this is what really happened, because then you start really dragging out, this story. It can become a much bigger and longer story than it is. So you've got to understand the facts, what's accurate, and be transparent about that. Don't have verbal diarrhea, but be transparent. And take ownership of the issues as we talked about earlier. Express empathy. I mean, I would say to companies, be human. Whenever these statements go out, like, we take the safety of our customers to be, you know, of the utmost importance, it's kind of like, all right, well, again, who doesn't take the safety of their customers to be of the utmost importance? Yeah. It's I'm a bit of a hypocrite. I'm sure I've put out lots of statements over the course of my career, but I get frustrated when you kind of write in those very formulaic statements.
So the more transparent, the more honest, and you do have that tension, right? Of like, how much information do we know? How much information can we? So you have to decide as the leader where your where you know what risk you want to kind of mitigate most, and how honest and transparent are you going to be in this case for your particular situation? And that's an interesting question. Let's so we did talk a little bit about what happens next. So you put out your first statement. You what else are you doing, right? So that's the first thing, is like you need to get it to the press. You need to acknowledge what happened, find out what happened, one, acknowledge what happened, and take accountability, overcorrect.
Yep.
So what do you typically see as effective steps after the initial response? You get that out, you get it out in time. What
yep.
happens next? What do you advise your clients?
I think, again, you're advising them to own the narrative moving forward, right? So own the narrative, as you don't want to be putting out a statement on this every day, because ideally this is a crisis. It's not been a good situation for you. So you don't want to be kind of constantly giving this fire oxygen. But if pertinent information becomes available, you want to be putting that out, you know, after a couple of days, after the next day, et cetera. You don't want to be doing an update every day. I think back to last year, actually, I thought with the way McDonald's, with the food safety issue they had, I think, with lettuce, right?
Did they have a contamination?
Where there was a number of people got sick. Yeah, McDonald's did a good job. I think did a fantastic job. I'm sure some in my profession might disagree, but I thought they did a fantastic job of putting out information. They had a video, it was a pre-taped video from the CEO saying what had happened, except they were taking responsibility for it and telling consumers, don't worry, it's safe now. So again, telling consumers like what they can do, reminding consumers everything's safe now and taking accountability for that. I thought the way McDonald's expressed empathy for people and were really transparent about that was fantastic.
Interesting.
And I think another tip when you think about preparing for these crises, that's the trick. You can prepare for them, all right? You can't prepare for every situation. I mean, if I'd have been working with a company like Astronomer, you know, we might come up with 20 potential scenarios.
That was not one of
what
them.
What could happen so that in the event of a crisis, we're prepared. I guarantee that was not one of them, right? Yeah, but you can prepare for crisis. At least you get the dynamics of how the executives and legal and communications and compliance are going to interact. I think for instance, when I talk to a number of clients, potential clients, are always telling me, oh yeah, we're prepared for crisis, Chris. Yes, we prepared for that. And I say, well, okay, well, let's think about some crisis that you could face today. Like, what if there's people asking your position on DEI and what the DEI policies are in your organization?
Mm-hmm.
That isn't necessarily a crisis, but you, in this current environment,
it could
that could
become
quickly
one.
Turn into a crisis as well. And yeah, exactly. And HR executive, the head of HR probably has an idea what they'd want to say, but have they cleared that with the rest of legal? Have they discussed that with the rest of the organization? Sorry. Have they discussed it with legal? Have they discussed it with the CEO? Have they discussed it with other executive leaders so that when a statement needs to be made, you can make that statement and respond rapidly? Or all of a sudden, are you trying to get the executive team together on a phone call from five different parts of the country, parts of the world, and trying to interrupt meetings so that they can get together and hash out, like, what should we say to this question about what's going on with our DEI, about
this hypothetical
our DEI program
question,
is or
right?
Isn't.
It's a hypothetical question,
because
right?
Because again, handled. Yeah, exactly.
The opportunity of kind of pre, like, how do you make the case for, like, these things haven't happened? Like, are you just saying, like, okay, we're going to set aside half a day and we're going to work through and talk through all the possible crises that might come up? Is that how you would advise? Like, that's, I mean, that, again, I'm not the expert, but I'm like, okay, with my clients, it's like, you need to say, we're just going to spend the time on this. Is that, and I can see pushback, right? We have other actual crises, you know, Chris.
Exactly. I mean, that's, look, as the founder of a small business at this point, doing crisis communications consultant, that's one of my biggest issues is getting people to invest the time and money in preparing for crisis. Because I think a lot of people think of it as like in insurance, right? You kind of, you're practicing these things, you're working through these things in case something goes wrong. And nobody, at least nobody I know, gets excited, super excited about buying insurance. But I think what I would advise is, like, you get your crisis plan off the shelf. And you, first of all, you look at it. It could be you looking at it for the first time in years. Check, are the processes that we've got in place roughly correct? And then look through some of the scenarios that are in there. And you're not going to have every scenario worked out, but at least you've got the start. Because I often find when you're trying to formulate what statement you're going to make in a crisis, the hardest thing is coming up with that first draft. So perhaps you've at least got to start. And as I mentioned earlier, you rehearse somewhat in the dynamics of how the team, how the executive team interacts with this issue, with an issue.
It's almost, Chris, it's almost as if the exercise is the useful piece of this. Yes, okay, we're going to pull the plan down, but actually sitting down and getting people to talk about some shit that they don't want to be talking about is actually the work.
Yeah,
is that fair?
That said more, a lot more eloquently than I was just saying, yes, but the exercise is the, you know, is the value of it, the value you get out of it. It's the exercise. If you, I with clients, I work through crisis simulations, and typically we do tend to try and run some simulations that are a little bit more different. Like, again, we talk about executive malfeasance. We don't necessarily talk about, like, the CEO's having an affair or something that's caught on, that the whole world gets to see. But we do talk about executive malfeasance because, you know, I worked with a hospital, for instance, and this hospital was really well prepared for what happens when there's a big bus crash and 60 kids get brought to the hospital. They're really well prepared for that. But being prepared for instance, how you handle a data breach or how you would handle executive malfeasance. Not that those things ever happen, but they're perhaps a little bit less well rehearsed. And so that's the importance of kind of, if you're conducting two crisis simulations a year, you conduct one on more the core of your business and one like in these other issues that can become big reputational issues. And after all, your reputation, again, everybody says, you know, everything's most important, right? Your employees, your most important resource, your reputation is your most important resource, your customers, your most important resource. I would actually agree employees are probably your most important resource, but reputation comes right after that.
It's all the kind of invisible value that you've built with your brand, right? Like, that's all the intangibles is what
exactly
they call
people
it.
People want to do business with a company they trust. You want to buy as a consumer. You want to buy from a business you trust, and a business to business company, right? Who's going to buy from a company that they don't trust? You know, you don't want to buy a product or service from a company you don't trust. So,
all right, let's finish up by going back to the astronomer kerfuffle. I don't even know what the core product is, some sort of technology, but there is this problematic because it didn't have to do with a data breach. It didn't have to do with their product. Could you make the argument, okay, yes, this was uncouth, but you can, like, do you think, okay, so we're coming from the point of view of the customer. How does this impact, let's go with the mid sales, right? We've already had a few meetings. We're thinking about inking a deal with Astronomer. This whole thing happens. Do you believe this is going to ruin the deal for a company engaging with them?
I believe it absolutely could, yeah. Because, like, while you could have potential customers just kind of, you know, maybe not laugh it off, but kind of laugh it off and say, okay, that's not the core of what your organization's about. That's not the core product or service that you're selling to me. There are others who could look at this and go, well, if that's, you know, the values of your organization, right at the top of the organization, how do I know this stuff isn't running rampant? And I'm in no way claiming, you know, it is running rampant at Astronomer, but how do I know that that's not the situation? How do I know that's not the values? And frankly, do I want to be going back to, you know, my CEO and saying, like, hey, I've just signed a, you know, X many hundred thousand dollar, X million dollar deal with Astronomer. Wait a minute, Astronomer, aren't they the company that just... You know, do you want to, again, it makes people, it's going to have people asking questions.
It doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't help your
no.
case. Let's just say that.
I'm sure the sales team's not being, didn't wake up, you know, being like, right, let's go, guys. Yep.
Oh wow. Well, thanks for coming on. Really interesting. I mean, I think it's a cultural moment, but it's also a learning moment for a lot of organizations. So the more we can get out there about prepping and preparing for what you don't prepare for or what you don't expect, I think is really important. Chris Beard, crisis communications expert. You can learn more about him and his work at crisiscommsshop.com. Chris Beard, thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio
and
helping
me.
Helping allay our fears about the next big crisis that might come up and get memed.
Yeah, and hopefully, again, I didn't pile on astronomer too much. So
I'm sure you are not the one anybody's looking at as far piling on. So, all right, thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays, and you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.